Charlotte Talks is sponsored by Mazda of South Charlotte, committed to bridging the gap between adventure and adventurer by helping people select vehicles that fit one's lifestyle. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com. This is Charlotte Talks. I'm Mike Collins. There's no stopping the future. It's coming. But what that future will look like, well, that's another story. When it comes to energy, our energy future, some seem stuck in the past, one characterized by fossil fuels. And when it comes to electric power generation, coal. An alternate path would be one that takes us to a future powered sustainably by biofuels, solar, wind, and through battery storage of electrical energy. Duke Energy has proposed plans for all of those things. They have already added more than 1,000 megawatts of alternative energy to their portfolio, and they've pledged to spend close to $500 million, that's a half a billion dollars for those doing the math, on battery storage over the next 15 years. But some say that's not enough, and it won't happen quickly enough. N.C. Warren feels Duke is actually stalling large-scale solar projects and that their commitment to renewable power will result in a mere 4% growth of sustainable energy in the state. The group also advocates moving toward a competitive energy generation system and delivery model as compared to the current monopoly of consumer choices. So this hour, we explore our energy future, the proposals Duke Energy has put forward, and the criticisms and suggestions of one of its key opponents, if that's the right way to phrase their position. Randy Wheelis is here. He's the communications manager or spokesperson for Duke Energy. He joins us here in our Spirit Square studio. Welcome back.
Thanks a lot.
Jim Warren is executive director of N.C. Warren, the group I just mentioned. They have worked for 30 years to help us transition to clean power by promoting what they see as energy and climate justice. And he joins us by phone. Welcome back.
Thanks a lot, Mike.
You're welcome. And David Borax reports on the energy sector for WFAE News, and he, too, is in our studio. Hi.
Hello, Mike.
Morning. If you'd like to join our conversation, you can. You can email us at charlottetalks@wfae.org, get to us through Facebook at WFAE, or Twitter at Charlotte Talks, and you can also watch at least three of us on Facebook Live this morning. Randy, let me start with a basic question. From Duke Energy and your industry's point of view, what is the future of coal and other fossil fuels in the production and generation of electricity?
Well, I think when you talk about fossil fuels, you're talking about carbon emissions, greenhouse emissions. Since 2005, we've lowered carbon emissions 31% at Duke Energy. A lot of that through more renewables. We've been retiring coal-fired stations and building new natural gas stations, which have about half the emissions of coal. So you're going to see coal shrink, natural gas expand, renewables continue to grow.
Natural gas is a fossil fuel.
Natural gas is a fossil fuel.
And aren't you buying or trying to buy emissions? This is biofuels, right? Emissions of methane? Because
right.
natural gas is methane.
Basically, they're close cousins.
So would you call that a renewable source of energy or a sustainable source of energy?
Called renewable natural gas because
why?
Because
the marketer did it?
No. It's just that it's derived from hog waste. Hog waste continues to happen. In the biogas example, these are covered lagoons capturing the methane, converting that methane to natural gas is pumped into a pipeline that's used at a Duke power plant. So that's a small part of the energy mix, yeah, but it is an emerging technology we're keeping an eye on.
When politicians talk about this, they refer to natural gas as a bridge fuel, one that will take us, help us make the transition. Because some areas of the country generate all their electricity from coal. So they point to natural gas as being a fuel that will take us from the coal to something better. How does Duke see it?
I think that's what you're seeing at Duke Energy. We've retired more than 30 coal-fired units in North Carolina. We're building natural gas. The emissions is better with natural gas versus coal. And natural gas is very plentiful and relatively cheap in the U.S., so it makes good sense.
So, David, as a reporter covering this field, where would you put Duke Energy as compared to other utility companies around the nation or around this region in the Southeast in terms of embracing fuels and technologies that we would refer to as the fuels and technologies of tomorrow?
Well, Duke Energy definitely has, I would say, at least one of each of the emerging technologies out there, everything from, as you mentioned, solar, wind, battery storage is a new thing for them, which is something that is being looked at as a potential big change in the energy landscape. They're using natural gas more than they used coal. Comparing them to other utilities in the area, I think, you know, Duke is probably would be an example of what the mainstream is in the utility industry. I mean, Duke is the largest utility in the country, and I think what they're doing is representative of what's happening elsewhere. I wouldn't say that they are ahead, although we should mention that, you know, solar power in North Carolina has become a big deal, and North Carolina is now the number two state for solar energy in the country, and so that's something that's moving along. But all of these alternatives are still a small percentage of Duke's overall energy output.
Because making a transition like this is enormously expensive. If you want to do it all, if you really were being altruistic about dropping all coal and all nuclear and going all wind and solar, it would cost a fortune. I'm not sure it could be done. But when you look at...
Actually, the cost is not in the construction of those. The cost is in the what we call sunken costs of all the other stuff that they've built that they want to retire.
That's
and
right.
They're not going to retire it until they get their money back for it. I mean, embedded in our rates that we pay as ratepayers is the cost of paying off all those plants that they built 25, 30 years ago.
So when you look at utilities across the country, would you say they're doing this, they're trying to do this as quickly as they can, or they're dragging their feet on this because they have all these plants that they need to pay off first or get their money back out of before they move on to some other technology?
I mean, large companies like Duke, which whose stock is sold on Wall Street, they want to keep the investors happy and also have kind of a nice gradual path that everybody can see where they're going. And I think Duke does a really good job of that. In states that have been deregulated, where the distribution, the lines that go to your house and business are separated from the generation of the power, things can move more quickly. And, you know, like in California, for example, there's a lot more renewable energy there.
Okay. Of the sustainable or renewable energies sources, generation sources that Duke uses, which one is moving the fastest?
I think solar energy is moving quickest, especially in North Carolina. David said we're second in the nation for solar. We had a very advanced law passed in North Carolina in 2017 that really set the path forward for more solar in the state. So right now we've got solar rebates that are helping residential customers go solar. We've got, and also commercial customers, we've got something called the Green Source Advantage, which is helping large industrials match up solar for their uses. There's solar leasing in North Carolina that we're trying to get involved with as well, that's just with, you know, and more advanced. So we're giving customers more options to go solar. You know, if you look at just North Carolina renewable energy, we're still small. It's, you know, 6% or so that I checked in North Carolina for the coming year. So, but that is expanding. If you look forward in the next 15 years, about a third of our new generation will be renewable energy. Two-thirds will be natural gas.
So now we've heard the rosy picture. Let's get the other side of the equation. Jim Warren is here. He's been here many times before, and usually with you, Randy.
We're good friends.
He's the executive director of NC Warren. They're 30 years old. They've been pushing for this transition to clean electric power generation because of their concerns for the climate. And this year, Jim, we have seen historic rains and flooding in North Carolina. We've seen stronger hurricanes in California. We've seen the worst fires in that state's history, all because we're told of climate change. If all electric power production companies in this country were able to convert instantly to renewable green sources of energy for power generation, what would be the impact in the short and the long term? Jim?
Mike, let me first commend you so much for this discussion. North Carolina has been starving for open debate about these issues. You know, the climate crisis is hyper-urgent. We are within 2 or 3 years of hitting a point of no return, according to the leading scientists. The good news is that renewable energy is cheaper than grid power in most parts of the country now, including here. But Duke Energy is making the climate crisis worse by expanding the use of fracked gas, which is worse than coal for the climate. And they are stifling clean energy, cheaper energy that could really help in the short term. To your question, would it matter? Number one, it can be done. NC Warren has a comprehensive plan called Clean Path 2025 that shows that we can rapidly replace coal and natural gas with mainly distributed solar paired with storage and energy balancing programs, and that this can be done pretty quickly. The other thing we have to do in the short term is stop the methane that is being vented unburned directly into the atmosphere throughout the natural gas infrastructure. But because Randy mentioned biogas, they're not doing much biogas. They're getting the lion's share of this huge build out of gas infrastructure from fracking. And so, this is the two clear things that we have to do is we have to stop these emissions because methane is 100 times more potent than CO2. So it is all important in the short term. And we have to quickly ramp up actual advances in renewables plus storage. To put a punctuation on Duke's plan, they plan in 15 years to be at 8% renewables in the Carolinas and with very low levels of storage. By comparison, a number of other utilities, big ones and small ones around the country, are way above 20% now. Some are going to hit 70% renewable by next year. So Duke is really near the bottom, and we really need to get them on the right side of this, and we really need to have Duke Energy stop stifling the public and regulatory scrutiny of its actions and its plans. So thanks again for the discussion. It's crucially important.
You're welcome. Well, what about this fracking thing, Randy? I mean, he's right. Fracking not only causes environmental problems below ground and above ground, you have to build a delivery system, and that's the pipeline that's coming, the controversial pipeline that's coming through North Carolina, is one way to deliver that gas from the fields wherever they are in Texas probably, or further down south. Isn't it cheaper, safer, quicker to build solar arrays and plug them into the grid than it is to bring natural gas out of the ground and then through these pipelines?
Well, actually, it's not cheaper.
Why not?
Well, I'll tell you, if you look at the contracts where we buy solar energy in North Carolina versus what we could buy natural gas energy, we're paying up to twice as much for the renewable energy.
Why buy it?
Well, we have mandates in North Carolina to do that, and we have regulations that we need to follow. So we do buy a lot,
mm-hmm.
and we build some as well. So the contracts, when you compare natural gas generation, solar generation, we're paying a lot more for solar generation. I think that misnomer that it's always cheaper is not true.
Is part of the problem, David, the fact, as he just said, they're under regulations from the state to buy power from solar providers, and if they had an open ticket to build their own arrays, they wouldn't have to do that. Would that lower the cost?
I don't think there's any restrictions on whether you buy or build yourself. There's just the limitations on how much can Duke invest in and build in a short period of time.
So the state
requirement is that they get up to 12.5% renewables by 2021.
What about the cost differential between natural gas and building the pipeline and paying for that construction and building a solar array and plugging it into the grid?
Well, Duke is looking at its costs from its standpoint, and as Randy just said, that when they buy it, that they have to pay a certain amount. I mean, you and I could put solar panels on the roofs of our businesses and homes, and
right.
The cost would be limited. And when Jim talks about distributed solar, he's talking about an energy environment that's very different from what we have today. Duke Energy and other companies like it are built on a business model of building centralized energy generation and sending it over wires over long distances. And what Jim is talking about is a situation where, the energy comes from much closer to home. Duke has some plans to do that with solar, but they're still in the development stages with putting it on your roof or what we call community solar, which would be a solar grid not too far from your home that you buy energy from. But we're not there yet.
Yeah. I mean, we do have 35 solar facilities in North Carolina, so we do have a lot. And right now we have a $62 million solar rebate program that's helping customers who want to go solar. So I think we're doing a lot. And to say that we're at the bottom, I disagree with that.
Well, I want to give you a chance, when we come back from the break, Jim, to talk about the obstructionism in this case. And we'll do that in a moment at Charlotte Talks on WFAE. Charlotte Talks is sponsored by Mazda of South Charlotte, committed to drivers that believe a car is used for more than just getting from place to place. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com. It's Charlotte Talks on listener-funded 90.7 WFAE and 90.3 WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. We're talking about the future of electric power in the Carolinas with Randy Wheelis, communications manager or spokesperson for Duke Energy. Also, Jim Warren, executive director of NC Warren, who would like things to move quicker. And David Borax, who covers this for us here at WFAE News. Before I come to Jim, you wanted to clarify what you were
right.
saying.
Right. So you asked if Duke is required to buy solar. And under the previous law in North Carolina, they did. If somebody came to them with a solar project, they were required to try and figure out if a deal could work there and and buy it. The change in the law last year says that they can change the process slightly, and they're now able to do more of a competitive bidding process on those. So maybe a solar developer might come up with an idea for a project that won't get built in North Carolina now.
So our state, as Randy mentioned, is now ranks second in the nation for installed solar power energy generation. It's still, the solar energy has been described by experts in the field as a tough nut to crack for whatever reason. But Jim, you believe that Duke is an impediment to the speed and proliferation of solar power. So explain that. Why do you think that?
Yeah, let me clarify one thing. I don't feel like Duke needs to move more quickly, as was said. I think they are moving too fast in the wrong direction altogether. Massive expansion of frack gas, puny levels of renewables and storage. And North Carolina is number two in the nation in solar despite Duke Energy, not because of it. The bill that Randy referred to is an impediment to the growth of solar. Most of the solar companies are angry with Duke because of that. Part of what can happen here is, the good news is, there are game-changing advances in battery storage that have been happening over the past year, even since our first Clean Path 2025 report came out. Storing renewable energy has for so long been seen as the holy grail of energy, and now lots of major corporations are moving in that direction, and the prices are plummeting. There's a new zinc air battery on the market that is totally upending the electric power industry. That's according to Barron's and other business writers. So the energy market is moving quite rapidly outside of monopoly areas.
But is that part of the problem? And if you're a major corporation like Duke Energy or Dominion Power in Virginia, whatever they call themselves, somebody else, do you want to put money, a ton of money, into a battery technology that in 5 minutes is going to be eclipsed by something newer, better, faster, more powerful?
Well, to be clear, any investments in that, in renewables or storage at this point, will be good investments, especially over the longer term. The problem, as has been alluded to here, is the structure. We have monopoly capture by Duke and Dominion and others of not only of their customer base, but of public officials and others. And so even as storage on its own is beating gas-fired power plants in many states on both cost and reliability, you've got monopoly utilities that are stuck in a 20th century, their leadership is, stuck in a 20th century, and who are trying to put billions of dollars of investments into the rate base, even though former CEO Jim Rogers has predicted that this industry is moving toward distributed energy. So they're trying to lock in investments because they have monopoly capture over North Carolina, and that really has to change.
Let's all get a clear definition of what you're talking about when you talk about distributed energy. What does that mean?
Yeah, okay, good. Primarily what we're talking about is what we call local solar, on rooftops, parking lots, vacant land near where it's being used, and you match that up with battery storage in homes and buildings, and sometimes at substations. But this market towards storage is moving so rapidly, and because it allows the customer then to save lots of money, and it really helps the utility to avoid having to keep building power plants, because it helps smooth out the electricity supply and demand. But the business model is, for Duke Energy, build power plants and pipelines and other stuff and keep constantly raising rates.
So when you talk about distributed energy, you're not talking about eliminating the power company from the equation. You're just talking about putting smaller solar arrays in areas where the power will immediately be used and or stored. But the power company would be involved in that process? Why do they have to be involved in that process? Why can't Bank of America put their own array up?
Yeah, they wouldn't necessarily have to be, but there are innovative utilities, small and large, around the country who are doing it this way and who are helping customers to add storage, by the way, with or without solar. You don't have to have solar power to benefit from storing energy and using it later. And what you create with that situation, you can create a virtual power plant because the utility can benefit when you've got storage scattered, you know, throughout neighborhoods and things. The utility can arrange to tap that storage when system-wide demand is high and put it to use to help smooth out the curve. So, and again, avoid building power plants.
So, Randy, what's Duke's energy? What is Duke Energy's position on all of that?
Well, when you look at battery storage, we did make an announcement recently. You talked at the top of the hour. $500 million in battery storage in North Carolina over the next decade or so. You know, at one time, the largest battery system in the nation belonged to Duke Energy next to a wind farm of ours in Texas. We do a lot of research on battery storage. We're big believers in battery research. Jim talked about a zinc air battery. What he forgot, that one of the first ones in the nation was at a Duke Energy facility in western North Carolina. So we know batteries, but we know their limitations. The prices have come down, but it's not prime time. You're not going to see one at every substation next week.
Yeah, you haven't called Tesla yet, right?
We have some. We're working with Tesla battery in Florida. We have one out at our R&D center in Mount
Stock
Holly.
Stock will go up now.
So Western Carolina's modernization project is something they've got going on at Duke, David, which they say aims to bring more solar and battery energy storage to the Asheville region while closing down a coal-fired plant there next year. So is Duke moving forward toward renewables in a responsible manner, or are they slower than they need to be, David?
You know, we have voices like Jim Warren's and other groups which think that Duke could move more quickly. Our state has this, as I mentioned earlier, 12.5% target by 2021 for Duke to be and other utilities to be using that percentage of renewable energy. In other states, it's higher. I think people who look at what's available now in the renewable energy field think that there could be a lot more going on here. So you got to start somewhere. Duke is moving along with that project in Western North Carolina, and they've identified these new technologies as being part of that. And that's unique for Duke. Duke has not, you know, said we're going to do an expansion that includes this. In the past, it's been we're building a new gas-fired power plant, or even beyond before that, we're building a new coal-fired power plant. So, you know, adding these into the mix is an innovation for Duke. Now, could it be going more quickly? I think so.
Jim? Yeah, NC Warren has commended Duke Energy. In fact, in a upcoming update to the Clean Path strategy, we commend them for that Western North Carolina project. But the problem is Duke Energy continues to treat battery storage as perpetual pilot projects while other utilities are moving way ahead. Duke is planning 260 megawatts of storage over the next 15 years. By comparison, the state of New York plans 3,000 megawatts of storage, and others are moving way ahead there too.
You got to look where you're.
By the way, compare that with 10,000 megawatts of new gas generation that Duke proposes for the Carolinas alone.
Randy,
you got to look where you start. Right now in North Carolina, we have about 15 megawatts of battery storage. We're looking like 300 over the next 10 years, $500 million investment. I think we're doing pretty good.
Talk to me about, we're tossing these terms around, and you all understand this, but we have listeners who don't know and don't care. They just want to turn the light switch on, and they want the light to turn on when they do. So what's the big deal with battery storage? What's that all about?
Well, I think energy storage is key, especially when you're talking about renewables.
Are you storing solar power? Because when the sun's not shining,
right,
you have to have power.
Renewable energy is intermittent. It's not going to – sun's not shining at night, so you want to store that. But battery
but
storage can do –
why can't you supplement that with the power you're generating at traditional plants? Why do you need the batteries? That's what I'm getting at.
Because a battery is going to do more than one thing than just store energy. It can actually help the grid. It can defer upgrades that need to be done. It can help the grid remain more reliable. You know, the grid was built as kind of a one-way street, but now with distributed energy resources, it's kind of going two ways. The battery can actually help the grid perform better.
Okay.
Right.
So
right.
Do you view them as pilot projects?
No. We've done a number of pilot projects in Charlotte and elsewhere, but we're talking about real projects. We have one in the Smoky Mountains.
But if New York State's ahead of us, why are they ahead of us?
I think they're putting out bids for a lot, and we'll see what happens. But another thing you got to talk about, and we haven't talked about yet, is the price per kilowatt of electricity. North Carolina is below the national average in the price per kilowatt of electricity.
11 cents?
11 cents, something like. When you're talking about New York, you're talking about, you know, 18 and that up there. So we're trying to promote renewables, second in the nation for solar. Rates, our kilowatt hour sales rates are still below the national average, and that's important. That's how you get business and industry into North Carolina.
We haven't talked about wind power. We live in one of the best parts of the country for wind power, according to scientists, particularly offshore wind power, because the wind that blows off our coastline is never ending, and it's a great place to be. NC Warren says that Duke Energy shuns wind power. What's your response to that?
Well, we have 20 wind farms across the nation, and
we forget that Duke Energy's operating all over the country.
Yeah, we're operating all over the country.
So why aren't we taking advantage of the wind power? We're in the best place in the nation for wind power. You got these farms in Oklahoma. Why aren't they here?
I don't know who said we have the best wind in the nation. We may not. I think they would say that our wind resources are better in the Midwest. We have them in Texas, Oklahoma, Kansas, Wyoming, those states like that.
Who did say that, David?
I'm not sure. Not sure I've heard that.
Let's get that person on.
I think you said it.
No, we did a program.
Several studies that show that offshore and nearshore wind are very large resources that North Carolina has, and Duke Energy has just chosen not to. And the difference is, Mike, that in this state they have monopoly control, and so their leadership is stuck in a 20th century business model of building a large power plants and raising rates and then using lots of customer money to stifle debate and to keep politicians and civic leaders on their side.
I don't think we're stifling debate. I think Duke has done a lot to promote renewables. We know about wind. I think if wind made sense in North Carolina, we'd be pursuing it. But right now, it's making better sense in the Midwest, and that's where most of the wind is in this nation.
Well, also, Randy, we should point out that where Duke is doing more wind power, it's under a subsidiary that is unregulated. So you have Duke Energy Renewables, which is based here in Charlotte, and they sell power to companies and other power companies based on different kind of a structure than what we have here.
Right. There's a regulated part of Duke Energy that we know and love in the Carolinas, but there's also a Duke Energy commercial that operates elsewhere and around the nation.
You know and love it.
I think a lot of people know and love it.
Yeah, Rick, go ahead, Jim.
Let me comment back to that about storage and solar prices. North Carolina is in the middle of the pack in terms of average prices for grid power. But there are utilities now. There's one in Hawaii. There's one in Ohio now that are using solar with battery storage at prices that are right at the price that North Carolina is paying for grid power, residential grid power. So solar with storage is cheaper. It's better. It can be done and help all customers through on-bill financing. And it can rapidly help us replace all the coal and natural gas. People can see this laid out in the Clean Path 2025 program, which Duke Energy fought to prevent regulators from having open review of. And they are still opposing open review of an alternate path. They want everybody.
Jim, I can't believe you brought up Hawaii. Hawaii has like the highest electric rates in the nation. Makes a lot more sense there when it's 35 cents a kilowatt hour versus 11 cents here.
What they're paying for in Kauai is lower than what North Carolina's average residential price of electricity is.
But the average customer in Hawaii is paying around 30-some cent per kilowatt hour. In North Carolina, they're paying 11.
Storage in 2019, they will be paying less than what North Carolina's residential price is.
So you say that Hawaii will be paying 11 cent per kilowatt hour in the future.
The Hawaii Electric Cooperative in Hawaii, it will be at 70% renewable next year, and they will be paying lower than what North Carolina's average residential price of electricity is.
I'm going to have to see that one to believe it.
Well, we'll have the new report to you soon. But again, others are doing the same thing. Energy would move mountains to try to build nuclear power plants at $20 a clip or $20 billion a clip. Mm-hmm. But they act like you can't do renewables except in non-monopoly states.
What is the cost? Randy, what is the cost differential between, say, building this pipeline or whatever Duke has to pay to make this pipeline happen, the gas pipeline, versus and acquiring the fuel for that pipeline, or building a coal plant, or building a natural gas plant, or building another nuclear plant? What's the versus building solar arrays and taking the power from that, or wind power? What's the cost difference?
Well, I think when you look at the Atlantic Coast Pipeline in eastern North Carolina, it does more than just fuel power plants. There's a lot of economic development interest in that pipeline. You talk to the economic development director in Cumberland County in Fayetteville, he knows that that's going to bring more business.
Why?
Because when the companies relocate to North Carolina, one of the first questions they ask is, what kind of access do I have to natural gas? And if you say you don't have much, then they go somewhere else.
And they want access to natural gas because?
Because it's used in industrial complexes. If you're going to build a car manufacturer or other things, you need, a tire manufacturer, you need natural gas. And natural gas brings more with it. You've got to think 1 million people in North Carolina use natural gas at home to heat. So obviously it's needed to people in North Carolina. And I'm from Nash County, and that pipeline goes through Nash County, and that area needs economic development, and I think the Atlantic Coast Pipeline does it.
Well, you get a lot more economic development by using distributed solar and storage and developing that across the state, and you add thousands more jobs than you do by building that infamous Atlantic Coast Pipeline and the 24 or so large gas-fired power plants that Duke Energy is proposing. The economic advantages are all in favor of a clean energy future, and others all around this country and around the world are seeing it.
No, I disagree. I think when you look at, there's only one interstate natural gas pipeline in this state. It runs west of Transco, is what it's called, runs west of Charlotte, goes up to Greensboro. And those are areas that have done well economically over historically, if you're going to compare it to eastern North Carolina. So I think
20th century thinking, though, Randy.
I don't think so. I think the new natural gas fire plants are more efficient, and they are actually, keeping the cost of electricity down. I think
they're in decline because General Electric and Siemens are both virtually abandoning their gas peaking plant divisions because everybody's moving toward renewables with storage, except for these monopoly utilities.
Well, here's you brought this up earlier, Jim. You said
cents.
It's worse than coal-fired. So do you want us to keep the coal-fired stations open and not build natural gas, or what?
That's a straw man argument.
Tell me which one you want.
I don't want either. We don't need either of them, Randy.
Oh, you do need either. I mean,
all right, take a breath. Take a breath. We have to take a break. Everybody take a breath. Deep breath. When we come back, we're going to talk about the economics of this, because that's what this all boils down to.
Absolutely.
This back and forth is all about the money. Show me the money. And we'll talk about the money with an economist in just a moment. It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE. It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE and WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. Randy Wheelis from Duke Energy is sticking with us, as is Jim Warren from NC Warren and David Borax from WFAE News. We'll come back to them in a moment. Energy, of course, is a major economic driver, and anything you do to shift how energy is produced or used has economic consequences. Peter Schwartz has studied the intersection of energy and economics for years. He's a professor of economics and an associate at EPIC, Energy Production and Infrastructure at UNC Charlotte. He wrote the textbook, Energy Economics, and has conducted longstanding research on electricity pricing in collaboration with Duke Energy. He's also received funding from the U.S. Department of Energy and the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency, and joins us now to shed some light on the economics of sustainable energy. Thank you for being here.
Sure, my pleasure.
When you take the politics out of the equation, where should our focus be when it comes to electric power generation? Should it be to try to keep the fossil fuel energy business going as long as we can to maintain jobs, or to focus on newer, cleaner, sustainable forms of energy?
Well, all of this discussion is really due to our concerns about carbon dioxide emissions and the contribution to climate change. Of course, as we know, taking the politics out of it, we still know we don't have 100% agreement that is a human-caused problem. But if we take that out of the equation, if it weren't for that consideration, we wouldn't be trying to accelerate the use of renewables.
Well, President Trump wants, of course, to bring back coal, and he's promised people in West Virginia to bring back coal and the jobs that are associated with coal, and coal is used to generate electricity. Pretty much that's it, at least in this country. Could we, if we focused on solar and wind and other forms of alternative energy, sustainable energy, could we create as many jobs as bringing back coal would? Because coal's not coming back, and we all know it. But could we create as many jobs?
I don't think that the renewable energy industry's strength is because it's going to be a more effective dollar-for-dollar job creator than other places that we could invest money. So I don't really think that that's the reason that we would do renewables. All of this is largely due to the fact that the U.S. has not put any sort of a price on carbon dioxide emissions at this point. And so we find ourselves, having to do all of these other things. And what that ends up leading to is you'll have somebody such as Jim Warren, who is, enamored with doing it by the use of renewables. And we have a renewable portfolio standard here in North Carolina. So we're actually ahead of almost every other state in the Southeast, if your goal is to have renewables. But what about electric vehicles? Those have not been part of the discussion. What about energy efficiency? So the problem is that none of us is smart enough to be able to figure out exactly how all these pieces would fit together, but we're in, what we call a second best situation. We're unwilling to do the first best policy, and so out of that we have to come up with these, do the best we can with these alternative suggestions.
In North Carolina, at least we do live in a relatively inexpensive electricity environment, and when you come right down to it and compare the cost per kilowatt hour that we're paying as customers versus what they're paying in other parts of the country, it's 11 cents. Actually, it's 0.1117 cents per kilowatt hour. But that's what customers really care about when it comes right. What's the bill going to be every single month? So if we transition from traditional power generation sources to sustainable sources, or if they start putting a carbon tax on the use of coal and natural gas to encourage electricity producers to move towards sustainable forms of energy, what am I going to see on my bill? What's my personal economy going to look like?
A $100 per ton carbon tax, which is far higher than anybody foresees happening in the United States for many, many years. I think Minnesota is one of the few states right now to actually factor in a price on carbon in making its decisions, and they use about $6 a ton. That would add about 4 cents to the price of a unit of electricity, which would be, a substantial increase of over 30%, given Duke Energy's current level of electricity.
And would that cause these companies to then focus more attention on bringing online more sustainable forms of energy?
Well, it would certainly give them a reason to do that, but it would also give them a reason, to continue to do research, perhaps, on carbon capture and storage from coal plants. That hasn't been working out so well so far. The cost of carbon capture and storage has not come down the way some of these other plans have done. But yeah, it would do that, and customers having higher bills would then also have a reason, to put on their own solar array and use less of the carbon-generated electricity. So it would cause all sorts of things to happen. But I don't want to dwell on that too much because we don't live in a perfect world. And, that proposal has been around now for, it was proposed in 2009 in the Waxman-Markey bill and was ultimately shot down. And, President Trump has indicated he's not going to support the clean power plan that the U.S. EPA put forward. So, we've got to keep moving in the absence of a lead at the federal level.
Utility companies have traditionally, since the beginning of the 20th century, been monopolies in most places because it does cost a lot of money to build traditional power generation plants and to build out the infrastructure to deliver the power from the plant to the home and to the business. And to make that probably economical. You correct me if I'm wrong. You're the economist. It had to be a monopoly. You couldn't have everybody having an electric company because they couldn't afford to build all these plants. And you wouldn't want all these plants all over the place. But now, with solar and wind and other forms of energy, that really could happen. How do you, because this has come up, the term competitive energy markets has come up, and they are actually being introduced in some places around the country. How do you make that happen and keep the traditional power company that has all this investment in distribution and plant generation facilities, how do you keep them economically viable and open the door to other competitors?
Well, I was in a group called North Carolina Utilities of the Future. And it had a variety of stakeholders. Duke Energy was represented, but so were energy cooperatives and businesses and so on. And there are these very disruptive forces that have hit a lot of other industries. And, Duke Energy certainly is involved in those efforts. And I think we can expect to see some pretty major changes in how electric utilities, regulated ones such as we have here in the Southeast, and that isn't likely to change soon given that the cost of electricity, the price of electricity is lower here than in many other places. But those types of, there's going to have to be, I would foresee, major changes in rates and rate classes. People who have solar panels on their house are going to have to be treated differently than they are now. And most of that is in its infancy. As was indicated, Duke has changed the way that it compensates owners of solar. And that's going to happen throughout the country because there are big debates about exactly how the use of solar and wind affect electric utility costs and how those things have to be interrelated. But I do think we have to say this is the structure we currently have, and I think that Jim Warren and Warren perhaps would benefit from taking a look at the report that we did maybe a year or two ago, because we've got to work with this utility that's been built here over a long period of time, and one that's been very successful and one of the largest in the country. And figure out how to make that work with the changes that are coming, because there are disruptive forces, and it's not a natural marriage between the two.
Okay. Jim, you want to respond to that?
Well, I will say we would love to quit fighting with Duke Energy leaders. We've said so a number of times, and we really need to get them on the right side of the climate crisis. I mean, all of this discussion needs to be placed in the context of the total climate crisis we're facing. We have a short-term window of opportunity to avoid hitting a point of no return toward runaway climate crisis. There's scientific consensus that the super potent methane emissions are way up in recent years and a key driver of the crisis, especially in the short term. And NASA says most of that is coming from fossil fuels. And Duke Energy, meanwhile, is massively expanding the use of fracked gas, which is the key force of the methane emissions.
Is that part of the conversation on the top floor of the Duke Energy Tower, Randy, the environment?
Yeah, I think the environment's key. And I think when you look at the environment and greenhouse gases, you're looking at three sectors, the utility sector, the transportation sector, and the agriculture sector. So in the agriculture, we're working with hog farms in eastern North Carolina. Transportation sector, we're very supportive of electric vehicles. And on the utility sector, we've lowered carbon emissions by 31% since 2005, which is the date of the Paris Accords.
Carbon dioxide only, Randy. You tend to pretend that methane doesn't exist.
Yeah, if you look at our methane emissions, I think that's been reduced by 22% in the last handful of years.
But if you're buying natural gas,
something in the record that proves it, Randy. You've never made that case until very recently, and there's nothing to back that up. And we have a system-wide problem. Most of the fracking emissions happen upstream, so Duke needs to get out in front and demand that other producers stop pouring unburned methane directly into the air. It's cost-effective to do that, by the way, Mike, but Duke has resisted
requirements.
So you're going to blame Duke Energy for how natural gas is explored in Pennsylvania or Texas or the Gulf of Mexico?
When we blow apart mountaintops in West Virginia to get coal, most people think that they have a responsibility if that coal is coming to
play. But the coal right. is going down at Duke Energy, so what are you complaining about?
Let me jump in here because we're short on time, and we have some emails. And we talked about this being disruptive. I think that Peter Schwartz just said that these changes in electric power generation are going to be disruptive, and they are, because these are new technologies coming online, replacing long-standing older technologies over time. And we talked about President Trump wanting to bring back coal because he wants to bring back the jobs that were lost when coal mining was decreased because of other technologies in power generation. Brandon emails, I work in the power industry. What about the jobs for the hundreds of thousands of us who work in the industry? Gas and solar plants only need a small group of workers to operate. How will I feed my family if there are no plants to fix or maintain as you move towards solar?
Well, one thing we haven't talked about yet is nuclear power, which is very key in the two Carolinas, employ a lot of people. And it's funny, our nuclear power plants are producing more power today than when they were built or 20 years ago. So nuclear power, especially if you want to talk about carbon emissions or greenhouse emissions, has a lot to do with that. And Duke Energy is a big player in that.
One quick note about jobs in the coal industry versus solar. Bloomberg reported earlier this year that there are twice as many jobs in the solar sector now as in coal. Now, President Trump is talking about trying to bring back the coal jobs. It's not going to happen for a million reasons. It's a whole other show. But the jobs in the solar sector are actually growing. So that is one area where some of these jobs will go. Now, is somebody who works in a traditional utility now going to end up working for a solar installer or a solar construction company? I'm not sure, but the number of jobs in the economy in that sector is going up.
Speaking of nuclear, Charles emails, solar is not the only clean energy source. You're ignoring the largest source of clean energy, nuclear power. Jim's argument, unfortunately, seems focused on a single solution, solar plus storage, and ignores the biggest impediment, the cost of the changes for which he is advocating. Technology costs may be falling, but they are still high, and the changes he's describing are not easy nor inexpensive. Economically speaking, Peter Schwartz, what about that? I mean, can we afford to make this change? Does it have to be done gradually so we can absorb the shock that we're going to go through?
Well, it has to be done proactively, which is that those who see the future coming to distributed generation and battery storage, and Duke Energy, we've got to figure out how those pieces fit together. There are, just on solar alone, though, I mean, I could come up with a dozen unanswered issues that haven't been solved in a satisfactory way about exactly how solar is going to be done. If you look at California, which plays the handy role for all of us of always leading the way on these things, one of the things that's happened in California is that their load curve now looks what they call a duck curve, which is to say that it's getting hollowed out in the middle of the day, and at the rate it's going, it's getting to the point where they may have not be able to run some of their nuclear plants. Sometimes the solar energy is valuable and sometimes it isn't. Now, storage will change that, but, we've got to make solar work before storage is a part of the picture. And so without that storage, solar is a very complicated form of energy. It's not just like running a nuclear plant or a coal plant or a natural gas plant.
So, David, from what you've seen as someone who follows this industry, what is the future of clean electric energy in the Carolinas? How quickly are we moving toward that? When we arrive, will we be better off economically and environmentally?
Well, I think the answer to the last question is yes, we'll be better off. We'll have cleaner energy, and if prices continue in the trajectory they're on right now, it'll be cheaper as well. I think it's going to be a gradual line upwards for all of that. And as Randy has described, it's all about the economics of it. And let's not forget, we have a publicly traded utility, and they need to satisfy Wall Street.
We'll be talking about this again in the future, no doubt. David Borax from WFAE News, Jim Warren, Executive Director of NC Warren, Randy Wheelis with Duke Energy, and Peter Schwartz, Professor of Economics at UNC Charlotte. Thank you all for the hour. Charlotte Talks is sponsored by Mazda of South Charlotte, dedicated to helping customers select vehicles that fit one's lifestyle. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com.